We're taking your mystery stories and phone calls with Joshua P. Warren. Hey, November 7th, I'll be in Las Vegas doing the program live. Linda Moulton Howe, our reporter, will join me. We'll be interviewing a number of guests at a major UFO conference. We'll put more of that information up on the coasttocoastam.com website as we get close to that. At the end of the program tonight, we're going warp speed with William Shatner. So stand by for that. We'll be back in a moment. More of your calls. Don't go away. Okay, Joshua, I can understand how ghostly apparitions of our dearly departed come back to us. I can understand that. What I can't understand is why innocent people, seemingly all by themselves, seem to get hit with these demons, these evil forces and spirits. Why do they get visited like that?
Well, George, that is an excellent question on a number of levels. Let's break it down. First off, let's look at the word evil here. I think that evil is a subjective thing. Usually we talk about the idea of killing people as being a good example of evil, but the reality is that, you know, it varies from culture to culture. You know, we say that murder is bad, but we go to war and we kill innocent people, and it's acceptable within a certain margin of error there. I define evil as being selfishness. If all you care about is yourself, then that is evil, in my opinion. Now, secondly, when it comes to the idea of how we are influenced or we interact with some other force, be it what we consider evil or good, you know, I was at the local mall the other day with a friend of mine who is a vegetarian, and we were walking down one of the hallways, and all of a sudden I smelled a wonderful aroma. Turns out it was fried chicken, and I said, "I'm getting hungry." And I, what is this? And he didn't say anything at all. I mean, I'm sure he smelled it, but he wasn't getting hungry. The fact of the matter is, this triggered a reaction in me, no different than, you know, I could trigger a reaction in you right now by not touching you, but telling you either A, you've just hit the lottery and you've won $1 million. Or B, your mother just died. You know, these are physical reactions, and the fact of the matter is, you know, your eyes don't see, your nose doesn't smell, your ears don't hear, they just collect information. It all happens in the brain. It's an electrical center where information is processed, and I believe that there are forces out there that can affect your brain because they are powerful on an electrical level. And I make a very clear distinction between what I say can be proven by evidence and what can be believed. But I personally believe, and I'm saying this as a person who has friends who are Christians and friends who are Satanists and all between. You know, I even made a documentary about the Church of Satan, as you know. And I, however, believe that ultimately there are realms out there which are defined differently by different belief systems that contain forces like the one that I encountered at Myrtle's Plantation. We'll call them entities that can affect different people in different ways, and that some of them can influence your mind and, more specifically, influence your brain to kick off a variety of electrical frequencies that make you feel different. And those people who are alone, as you said, who are secluded, they are more open and susceptible to these things because they are less distracted. And I think that there are human beings who can influence you to be better or worse, and there are other forces out there that can influence you to be better or worse. And usually if you surround yourself with enough good people, and good meaning, you know, people who inspire care for others, mm-hmm. then you are, for better, you know, distracted by their energy, and they keep you on the right path. But if you're sitting there alone, especially if you're tied into your television and your computer and your radio, and, you know, and I'm not saying anything bad about the media, but come on, you know, there's so much fear-mongering going on in the media that you are just open to bad news. You're expecting, you know, the world to just burst into flames at any moment, and I believe that that makes you a more vulnerable person to these forces that will come around and influence you to, you know, to smell, if you will, as an example.
Well, don't you believe, Joshua, people who surround themselves with negative people and negative influences on a regular basis, on a day-to-day basis, no matter how positive they might seem, if they continue to surround themselves like that, they're going to get pulled in on it, aren't they?
Yes, they absolutely will. I mean, it's a bad idea to consider the media your reality. I mean, once in a while, I turn off my cell phone, I turn off my computer, I turn off my TV and radio, and I just walk outside and sit there and enjoy the breeze and the sunshine and the birds chirping. And, you know, I think to myself, if I didn't go and listen to this device or look at this device, I would not know that the world was going to hell in a handbasket. And I think that we must do that, because right now the technology has advanced so much, and so many of these psychologists are involved in looking at, you know, how to influence behavior and marketing, that they are doing a heck of a job manipulating the public into thinking negatively, and our thoughts transform into physical behaviors and physical outcomes. And I think that's one of the reasons that right now we are in a situation which is looking dire.
You may be right. Let's go to Alabama. Leanne, you're on the air with us, and my gosh, you've been waiting an hour. Hi, Leanne.
Hey, well, originally I was going to talk about EVPs and what you thought of them, and if he has time, you know, to get to that, that's okay. But,
well, listen, you've waited an hour, so you ask them as many questions as you want.
Well, okay. You know, over the years I've heard EVPs and everything, and I've briefly heard you mention them tonight. You didn't really go into them that much, and I was wondering what you thought of them. You know, I've always heard that a lot of times they can be impersonators coming from lower levels, you know, because some of the ones I've heard, I mean, they haven't really sounded like they were having a good time. And now there's some kind of thing on the internet. My son's into that kind of thing, and there's something where you can get on the internet and go onto this website, and these people will get on there from all over, and they supposedly can do EVPs, and I don't know, I'm kind of skeptical about those, you know, and I just wondered what you thought of the real ones, and you know really what you were getting when you got those.
And we never hear happy EVPs either, Joshua, do we?
You don't.
Well, you know, it kind of depends, because we have to look at the terminology here. And Leanne, this is a great question, because there are so many people who are wondering exactly the things that you've asked about here. EVP, of course, is a very general term for electronic voice phenomena. And the idea is that you go to a haunted place and you use some device that's capable of, you know, recording audio, and then maybe you'll get some type of voice from the other side. I do think that there is a way that this could actually work, because I have demonstrated, in fact, on my website, my team's website, lemurteam.com, we have a section where we go into how you can actually go out and demonstrate that you can use a recorder in a place where there is no sound that you can hear with your ears, but you can produce sound artificially that makes it onto the recorder. It's very similar to what is happening in the broadcasting field. But all that aside, to get right down to your experience in the field, EVP generally is just too vague and too inconclusive for us to place much weight on it. And, you know, I hear more EVP than anybody, and some of it sounds very, very significant. I mean, some of it sounds good enough that you would say, okay, this could be a human voice. But the sad reality is there is so much stray contamination going on here in terms of all the radio and TV stations, satellite transmissions, and goodness knows what else around us, that at this point, I don't think that we can put much store in EVP until it is good enough that it matches the level that we are on right now, speaking to each other when there is no doubt that we are talking in a defined way that has some longevity, and getting some little blurb here and there is just not good enough. Even if those blurbs are actually coming from some other dimension, it's not good enough. And so I find EVP to be a curiosity, but I do not think that we should consider it to have any fantastic weight in this field of research under these circumstances.
Well said. Any more questions, Leanne?
Well, yeah. I had heard a couple of callers about, you know, talking about, you know, experiences and, like, out-of-body experiences, in which, George, I think I had called you several months back. You had someone on, and I told you about this really strange out-of-body experience that I had never had before. And a couple of weeks back, I was having some problems with some kidney stones. I mean, really bad enough that I had to go in the hospital.
Ouch.
And, yeah. And I went in, and they, you know, they kept me in there the first day because I had a blockage. And the doctor, you know, the next day wanted to go in and put a stent up in there to push the stone back up into the kidney. So, you know, he was hoping a couple of days later he could do the lithotripsy, you know, and get it out. And, well, the first thing that happened, you know, the next morning they took me into the little pre-op area, you know, and they've given me all the medicine and, you know, kind of that knockout shot. And they give you some stuff for your stomach and stuff like that. Well, I was just, you know, they rolled me in there and I was just talking to the people, you know, just like I'm talking to you now. And I was laying there and I didn't get scared. I was just laying there, and all of a sudden, the guy was sitting there talking to me, and I could not talk. I could not move. I don't know if my eyes were open or not, but I could see everything, you know, around there in that room, and I could hear him talking. And I didn't realize, though, it just seemed like I was there for a few minutes.
Were you looking down on everything?
Kind of, sort of. Kind of like I was moving around a little bit.
Do you think, Joshua, that was an EVP?
Well, I mean, not an EVP, but I mean, it could have been some type of out-of-body experience. I mean,
well, that's what I meant. I'm brain fried right now. In OBE.
Yeah, it very well could have been because generally, when people are in states of duress, it's understandable that the only option they have to cope with it is to separate themselves from their physical body, which to me, you know, that's a whole different, you know, show in terms of why that we are capable of separating ourselves from our body. But in this particular case, it seems like a classic example of being in a situation where, you know, it's not natural. It's foreign to you in every way. And also, there's always some suspicion about what could go wrong at any moment. And it seems like a classic circumstance under which that your mind would separate from your body. There are people who would tell you that that was something that you were doing as a coping mechanism. There are others who would tell you that your mind is actually separated, and there's no way of knowing the difference between the two. But I would consider that wonderful grounds for a legitimate out-of-body experience.
Okay, let's go to Tracy in Las Vegas. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, I have a story about ghosts and clocks.
Ghosts and clocks, okay.
Yeah. Something has been waking me up regularly in the middle of the night at the same time, and I live alone, and so I know there's no one here. Like, last week, I got woken up three nights in a row at 5:17 a.m., the first night I just woke up and looked around and it was 5:17. The second night, it felt like somebody was shaking me in my sleep. And I woke up and I looked and it was 5:17. And I know I wasn't dreaming because I called someone and told them. you know, at like 5:20, I said, you'll never guess what happened. He said, what? So, yeah, it's the second night in a row.
You woke somebody up?
Yep, I told him. Well, he was going to work, so it was okay.
Okay.
Because he said, what are you doing up? I said, something woke me up, a ghost woke me up. And then the third night, something tapped me on my shoulder. And I turned around real quick and woke up. I mean, there was no one there.
And it was 5:17.
Yes. And then it stopped. And then it started again last night. I woke up again. And I spun around. It felt like something was here. And I saw the clock change from 5:16 to 5:17.
See, for some reason, Tracy, this time is significant to you. Because I don't think that's a significant number to the masses, Joshua, is it?
Well, this is going to creep Tracy out a little bit. But I know about a woman who had the very same experience, except for her it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And this happened to her time and time again until finally one of her coworkers suggested what I said earlier, to run a video camera and, you know, play it back. So, because, you know, right at 2 o'clock she'd wake up and she didn't know what was going on. Well, sure enough, she ran the video camera. She woke up at 2 o'clock and the video camera was running. She didn't see anything weird. She played it back the next day. And at about 1:58 a.m., a tall, dark, hooded figure floated up to her, stood there and watched her for about 2 minutes, turned around and floated away. And then she woke up. Now, the question is, who are these beings, and why do they watch us when we sleep? And I think that, you know, in your case, if you were to do the same thing, I know this is going to creep you out, but you might actually have one of these beings visiting you and drawing your energy. But, boy, we always get into the best things, right? We're coming up on a break, so...
Well, and you know what? I'm not going to let you go yet. There's too many people calling. Sorry. You've donated your Friday night to us, Joshua.
Well, you know, I can't think of a better way to spend it because, you know, I love this show, and you guys have always been very kind to me. And, hey, it's October. We're coming up on Halloween, so what the heck?
This is your month. Well, we will do that. You know, Josh, how about traveling for you? Any conferences or anything like that coming up?
Well, you know, all of my focus has really been on Puerto Rico lately. And, you know,
I
talked to you about that.
I remember you were telling me about Puerto Rico. As a matter of fact, I have a friend of mine. She's from Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And she just was enamored with what you're saying. I'm sure she's listening right now. Go ahead.
Well, I continue to say, and I will stand by it, that I can justify what I'm finding in Puerto Rico as it being perhaps the most paranormal spot in this part of the world, in the Western world right now, and maybe altogether. Whatever's going to happen in 2012 has some relationship to Puerto Rico. And, you know, I am going back there again in less than a month. And I'm taking very small, select groups of people with me who I've handpicked because whenever I go to Puerto Rico, I'm finding that it encompasses all the aspects that I find most important in the paranormal field. It's all in one spot that's 100 by 60 miles wide. And I feel drawn there inexplicably. And every time I go, I learn things that blow my mind because I never cared at all about Puerto Rico before this year. But I'm telling you, George, there's something happening there, and I'm drawn there.
And back you go. And you're going to have to call us when you're down there, Joshua, and just give us a live report, can you?
I will be happy to do that. Yeah, yeah, of course. I'll let you know what's happening in real time because, you know, I don't care if it's cryptozoology or ghosts or UFOs or psychic phenomena, you know, miracles, treasure hunting. It's all right there in addition to so many natural wonders. And I really do feel like that people who feel a natural attraction, a natural draw to Puerto Rico should contact me. And
Right on your website, joshuapwarren.com. Back in a moment with final calls with Joshua when we come back. Well, it's shout-out time because without you, we'd just be another radio show, wouldn't we? Thank you to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations, wherever you may be. Streamlink members, hello to all of you. And then XM satellite members as well. And then the various chat rooms all around North America, including, of course, our dear friends at the NighthawkZone.com with their strong memberships, third anniversary, and keep on going. Imaginative Worlds into Infinity, Frog Forum, Sorcery IRC, the various MySpace groups that are all over the place, many of them are coast to coast, even though it's not us, it's them. And so thank you so much for being part of Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, Joshua Warren, hanging around with us in your phone calls. Joshua, my beautiful little 14-year-old grandchild, Ari, is going on her first little prom tomorrow. And she's all excited about that. Her date is a little guy named Ben. And it's so funny about dating. They're not going together. They're going to meet there. Because my daughter will bring Ari, and I'm sure Ben's parents will bring him to this little school prom.
You are experiencing something that I will never experience, George, because I don't want children.
What do you mean you don't want children?
No, I'm too. Speaking of selfishness, I'd rather spend all my time with myself and my wife. And we actually agreed we do not want children. So I would love to meet your grandchildren, but that is good enough for me.
Well, you know what? And let me applaud you, because if you don't, you know, have this gusto for children, and there's a tremendous responsibility there, Joshua.
Yeah.
You know, you're better off not having children, and you know, just be the friend to so many out there, because I know you have many out there that are friends. But this is fun for me. You know, I came back to St. Louis, you know, just to tune myself up with my family a little bit, to get the October weather here in the Midwest, which was the best any place, and get a feel for Halloween. Then I'll go back to Los Angeles for a couple weeks, and I'm going to come back here, finish out the shows and the rest of the year doing programs back at the Cave in St. Louis. But gosh, she's all excited, and apparently he bought her a little flower, and and off she goes.
Well, you know, I tell you something interesting, and let me take your very positive image and turn it back to doom and gloom, okay?
Oh, nice guy.
I was recently talking to a woman who is rather well known in the field of paranormal marketing and research and all that, and she told me that her mother always told her that when the day comes that there is a generation of people who do not want to have children, that's when you know that something bad is going to happen, that they have all, you know, sort of picked up psychically on the fact that something terrible is about to occur. Because you must keep in mind, on my mom's side of the family, there were 10 children, and on my father's side, there were 7. And to go to me having zero by choice, it does make you wonder if right now there is a rash, and I've heard there is a rash of a generation, and I'm in my early 30s, of people who do not want to have children. And, boy, you know, I hate to add to that negative dark cloud, but it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to Darren in Phoenix. You're on the air with us. Hey, Darren, take it away.
Hey, George, it's a pleasure.
Likewise.
Josh.
Yes.
You are like my mentor.
Really?
I've read.
He is. He's my hero, too.
That's awesome. Hey, I'm actually a paranormal investigator out of Phoenix in Arizona, and I have a case that is just absolutely mind-boggling me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's a story to it, but I don't want to get into it because it'll take too long. We've tried to film what I'm trying to explain is a poltergeist, okay? It's happening underneath a sink in a lady's house every night at about 11:17 p.m. We tried to videotape it. When we do that, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing. excuse me.
Sure.
We've gotten, like, sound audio. I mean, you can hear the bottles and the, like, cleaning supplies underneath the sink just thrashing. When you open the cupboard underneath the sink, everything is perfectly in a straight row. It's kind of freaky. We've even played with the bottles, moved them around. They always end up in a straight row. Now, we've had the plumbing checked, you know, like garbage disposal, you know, everything underneath the sink. Clear as a bell. I need some help, Josh.
Hmm. Well, you know, Darren, and by the way, thank you for your kind words. That means a lot to me. You know, right off the bat, whenever there is any issue dealing with moving water, I mean, water in general, but especially moving water, you're talking about some very complex fields that are created there electrically. I mean, you would be amazed at how many places I investigate that turn out to have strong flowing underground streams and springs. And there is something about the electrostatic charge that builds up around flowing water that is significant. Now, obviously, we all have sinks, we all have plumbing, so, I mean, it's not like this is something that can be explained by simply looking at plumbing issues. I know there are ghost-hunting plumbers out there, but this is a little different. But right off the bat, that is one thing that I find interesting about it. Now, what I would look at is what's called isotropic capacitance. And this is something that most paranormal researchers are not familiar with. And isotropic capacitance is the relationship between different objects in a room and how they are able to build up a charge on their own and then discharge it at a particular time when paranormal manifestations occur. And I bet you that there is some type of relationship between the isotropic capacitance of the plumbing in that particular bathroom and something of a geomagnetic nature, which is causing this. If not causing it, at least helping to accelerate it. And so I hope that you will email me. Go to joshuapwarren.com. Email me with this because I would love to follow up on it. And it's just the kind of thing that I'm most interested in.
Joshua, what got you interested in the paranormal a long time ago? Must have been when you were a kid, and like you mentioned, your family was into this. Is that what happened?
Well, you know, I'm going to spill some beans here that I'll be reiterating on your ghost-to-ghost program, because there is a ghost story that I have sent that you'll be playing, I presume. But let me go ahead and get into it a little bit here.
No, if that's going to be on ghost-to-ghost, don't tell me.
Okay, well, then never mind.
We'll keep that clean.
You'll find out on ghost-to-ghost. Then.
You got that right. Okay. All right. Then that'll tell us how you got into it. First-time caller, Bruce in Virginia. Hey, Bruce.
Hey. How's it going, George? How's it going,
good.
Josh?
Good, my friend. Hi. Thank you.
I got a question for you, Josh. This is more on the UFO thing. You know, for thousands of years, they had it in the Egyptian pyramids and stuff, the sightings, supposedly, all the way up until now. Now we got these things that have been watching us for so many years and stuff, and they don't ever stop to stretch their legs or to walk around or anything. And if we had technology to go billions of light years away, wouldn't we stop, talk to a life form or something on another planet? I mean, it seems strange that they never stopped to actually talk to us.
Well, you know, Bruce, what it really boils down to is where they come from. I mean, you know, you're talking about the assumption that they come from light years away, but
right.
Ultimately, I think that they come from a different point in space-time. And whenever people ask about this question of where do they come from, I always have to say, look, if we know that the time is flexible and that space and time are related, well, then therefore we know that space is flexible. So if all that's flexible, then it's not a matter of where they come from. It's a matter of what is your point of view when you ask that question. So they simply come from elsewhere. I mean, I know that may not be a satisfying answer, but I think that these entities come from another dimension of reality. And it's hard enough to understand dimensions in general, but nonetheless, the question of where do they come from becomes sort of irrelevant if you don't define your perspective and your position. So I know that all may sound very philosophical, but it may be that these beings visiting us are not coming from light years away, but are actually coming from millimeters away in another dimension. And I actually have a theory, or actually it's a hypothesis called the paratemporal loop hypothesis. And I've never gone into this hypothesis in detail And it's very complex because I think it needs to be, but it accounts for so much of the activity going on. But one thing that it takes into consideration is that the most likely explanation for why that we are being visited by these beings who have relatively humanoid features, i.e., you know, two eyes and two arms and two legs, is because they are probably humans from the future. I mean, they probably are, and I know there's nothing new about that. I mean, that idea has been around for a long time. Maybe at some point, you know, we can set up a whole program on the paratemporal loop hypothesis, and I can get into all the nuts and bolts of it. But I think it's more likely that these are beings that have evolved here on Earth that are coming back from the future versus visiting from some other planet.
And it's very possible that if time travel becomes a reality, they come back.
Well, why wouldn't they? You know, I mean, really think about it. That's one part of the hypothesis. I mean, actually, the crux of the hypothesis is this. If ever in the future, and I'm talking ever, and you have to stretch your imagination to the absolute boundary, if ever in the history of existence, some species, be it directly derived from us or otherwise, learns how to come back in time, will they do it? I say, yes, they will. And therefore, we end up with a whole series of loops of beings from the future coming back to the past, and at that point, it becomes corrupt because they're each trying to manipulate the past to give themselves the best outcome in the future. It's crazy stuff, but you know, it makes sense to me.
Let's go to Dave in Van Nuys, California. Hey, David, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Since I was a child, I was able to draw pictures of things that I would see later in life in the future. It was very strange. And like when I was in child, before televisions had knobs on it, I was drawing TVs with electronic with buttons, square buttons with numbers on it, and digital displays before it was even invented. So. I've practiced since then to do stuff such as like what Ed Dames does, remote viewing.
Sure.
And one of the freakiest things, I can't get exactly on the dates, but I did see, one of the worst things that I did see was a large flash in the sky. It was over California. It created massive devastation. That was the worst thing that I saw. I can't get a date. When I get a date on, I'll let you know. And by the way, my mom's the same way, too. She predicted airplanes flying into buildings on Art Bell's show, actually. So she's pretty good, too. And I told one guy about the terrorist attack 14 days before it happened. So I'm pretty tuned in. One thing, I want to tell you something really strange, the strangest thing that I've seen doing this remote viewing thing. I went to the year, I think it was 2800. I arrived in an apartment, a fifth-story apartment floor. The year is 2800. I'm in a room. There's a man sitting down on a couch. Everything, a lot of the technology there I can't even comprehend. It's just too advanced. I don't even know what I'm looking at most of the stuff. But the couch I can make out, it looks like it's sort of melded into the wall. And there's a large window. The window stretches about maybe 30 feet. It's about 4 foot high. And there's a 4 foot section that's open of the window. And there's, like I said, there's a male adult sitting on the couch. There's an infant crawling on the ground. And there's a small cat, a kitten. Okay? I'm in a room. I go in there. I pick up the cat. I'm interactive. Maybe I've jumped in someone else's body. I don't know how I'm doing this, but I physically pick up the cat. I sit on the couch. I'm playing with the cat. The guy next to me grabs the cat out of my hands. He cups his left hand over the head of the cat and pulls his neck outward, and it becomes stiff. And it freaks me out. I grab the cat from him. I look at it. It was a machine. It wasn't even alive. And I did the opposite. Jeez. I put my hand over his head. I pushed the head in, and it turned elastic. Freaked me out. I dropped it on the ground. And he was walking back and forth and then sit down, did this thing. At this point, I noticed the infant was crawling towards the window, which was open. There's an open place. There's no handles. It looked like it was electronic. It was just missing a piece of glass with no screen or anything. The infant's on the couch, crawling next to that open window, ready to jump out. So I run over. I grab the infant, and I hold the infant, and I yell at the guy. I go, the guy sitting next to the male doll. I go, she almost fell. I didn't know if it was a boy or girl, so young. And I said, she almost went out the window. And he turns his head slowly and nods up and down. I'm like thinking, what is wrong with this guy? And I hold the infant. I look at it, and I look at him. They're both machines, okay? Now, I'm like, oh, my God. I look out the window, and I'm thinking maybe this is, you know, this is their toys. So someone can't have children, so they had a robotic kid and a cat. I can understand the litter box. And the male guy's telling me some alarm system, some security device, right? I look out the window. I'm five stories up. I can see as far as I can see. No plants, no trees, all cement. There's occasionally I see a couple people coming out from underground. It's like I said, it's all cement. There are no clouds. The sky's just blue. I see people walking from underneath like a subway. Every once in a while, maybe there's three or four at a time. The people are walking fast. Okay? And it hits me. I'm looking at the way these people are walking. I'm telling you, they're machines. They're machines. Everybody was dead. There was nothing there. There was no screen on the window because there's no insects. At this point, I think, I don't know, it freaked me the hell out at that point, seeing there was nobody alive. I'm thinking maybe something happened and we just left it, like the Egyptians left the pyramids just to try to...
Maybe, David, the machines took over. You know, that's always that distinct possibility. Joshua, we've heard stories about that in the future.
Now, this was a dream, right?
Yep, that was his dream. But maybe the machines took over.
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm not a dream interpreter.
That's a great story.
You know, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, I think, has done a good job interpreting dreams. So, I really can't tell you much about that. But I can tell you that I have had personal dreams that have come true, and many of them. I think that when you're in the dream state, your mind is open, and we can prove that your brain waves change so much that you're more susceptible to visions of the future. But that's a pretty wild dream, and I don't know what to say about it. You know, maybe it will come true, maybe it won't. But, dreams are like that.
East of the Rockies, Houston we go. Jeffrey, it's you.
Evening, gentlemen.
Yeah.
I've been a police officer for about 3 years. And in those 3 years, I've been the investigating deputy for what we call DOAs, or dead on arrivals.
Okay.
The first three, first one was an old lady. She was in her late 80s. Had died in her sleep. The second guy, he had actually had a heart attack in his car. I was actually coming home from training and watched him go into a ditch. And the third one was a suicide. She left a note for her family, everything. Now, these first three, I had noticed a pattern. Like I said, we've got to make sure that it was a natural cause of death and secure the scene. And on the first three, I could see in their eyes, the only thing I can describe it as a gray hurricane-type swirl in their eyes. And when I saw that there was a repeating pattern in these three, I figured, okay, well, that's just maybe the natural death process. Really didn't think anything. It scared me.
Yeah. That's got to be a horrible sight, Jeff, huh?
Well, it was just the creepiest thing. And you watch, you can actually see death take over this body, you know. And the last one that I was on, this happened maybe last week. She was in her mid-50s, and she had a fistula in her arm. For the listeners who don't know, a fistula is a plastic tube that they insert in the arm for dialysis treatment.
Right, exactly.
And this lady had, for the past 2 weeks, her family said, when she went to get her dialysis treatment, the fistula would bleed. And the last time she had went, she had to go to the ER. So she had been having problems with this fistula. Well, we get the call. The family had come home and found their mother lying dead in the bathroom.
So can you hold right there, Jeff? I'm going to take this break and come right back to you. Okay? Jeff will be with us. Josh, your choice.
You got it. The rest of the show, I'm there.
Unbelievable. We'll be back.